Okay. Okay, good morning. Thank you all very much for coming. Today's daf is daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. Just to review a little bit of what we had gone over yesterday. So on daf Kuf Chaf, the Gemara at the end had a discussion about whether you can indirectly cause a fire to go out. So the Gemara tried to draw a parallel between the question seemingly of can you indirectly cause the name of Hashem that might be written on someone's arm to be erased. That whether there's a whole question, do you have to wrap the name of Hashem or not wrap the name of Hashem? And presumably that's this question. If somebody has the name of Hashem on his arm and he has to go to the mikvah, can he indirectly cause the name of Hashem to get erased or not? The Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe everybody agrees that in regards to the name of Hashem, you're really not allowed to, really, it's not such a big deal to indirectly cause the name of Hashem to get erased, because the Torah said, Lo ta'asun kem la'Hashem elokeichem, don't, you know, destroy, you're supposed to destroy idols, but don't destroy the godly things in that way. So you're only not allowed to directly destroy, but indirect is not such a problem in terms of the name of Hashem. Of course, the argument about whether or not somebody who has to go to the mikvah, whether he has to wrap the name of Hashem that might be written on his arm, whether he has to wrap it in a bandage, in a gemi, is a different question. Do you have to go to the mikvah at the first possible moment, or can you wait? And that's a separate issue. And that we know is an argument whether tefillah bizmana mitzvah, the first chance you have to go to the mikvah, you have to go, or tefillah bizmana lav mitzvah. That's how the Gemara completed its discussion yesterday. So today, we start off Kuf Chaf Aleph with the Mishnah. And it's a very exciting Mishnah, because this is something that is very, very practical. This is the issue that a Jew, not only do I have to keep Shabbos, but I'm not allowed to have others do for me what I can't do for myself. So I can't ask a non-Jew to do malacha for me. And if I'd see my child doing a malacha, I'd have to stop him also. Because not only do I have to keep Shabbos, but part of keeping Shabbos is also not to have done for me violations of Shabbos. However, as we'll see, a very, very important principle. If the non-Jew is doing the malacha not for me, but for the non-Jew, then it's allowed. So for example, let's say you have a den and the lights are off and you want to read the magazine on Friday night. You want to have Onik Shabbos, as we learned last week, enjoyment of Shabbos. But the lights are off, you can't enjoy it. So to tell the non-Jewish housekeeper, Maria, please come in, you know, it's dark here, that doesn't work, because then Maria's lighting the lights for you. What you can say is, Maria, I think you should have a cup of coffee in this room. So then Maria goes and wants to bring her own cup of coffee. But to drink the cup of coffee in the dark is not it's not so enjoyable. So she's going to turn on the lights for herself. When she turns on the lights for herself, you're allowed to enjoy those lights too. So that principle, that whatever a non-Jew does for himself, for their own reasons, you're allowed to benefit from, that's what we're going to learn today in today's Mishnah. Very important Mishnah. Okay, so thank you. Now you can hear me, I hope. Okay, sorry about that. So today we're going to learn Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. We start with the Mishnah. Nachri Shebalachabos. We've been learning about a house that's on fire. So we learned the Jews not allowed to put out the fire. In fact, because the Jews not allowed to put out the fire, the rabbis even didn't allow the Jew to go in and save things from the fire. They only allowed him to save Kisvei HaKodesh, holy writings. They allowed him to save enough food for this Shabbos, maybe three meals, or maybe enough food he still needs to eat. And they allowed him to go in and get clothing out of the fire on Shabbos. But otherwise not, because they're worried he's going to put out the fire. What about a Nachri Shebalachabos? What about if a non-Jew comes? He wants to put out the fire. Ein omrim lo kabei. You don't tell him, go put out the fire. Because that's the principle of Amiro Nachri Shvus. There's a rabbinic prohibition. We're not allowed to tell a Gentile to do what we ourselves are not allowed to do on Shabbos. We can't tell a Gentile, do for us what we're not allowed to do. Or, Let's say he's putting out the fire. We shouldn't tell him to stop. We don't have to tell him to stop either. We don't tell him one way or the other to do malacha. You are not responsible for the non-Jew keeping Shabbos. You don't have to tell him to stop if he's putting it out the fire. And you don't have the right to tell him to put it out. However, let's say one of your children sees that the house is on fire, so he feels bad, he wants to put out the fire to save his family's house. Then you have to stop him. Ain't Shomalo, you don't let him to put out the fire. If because you as a parent have a responsibility to teach your children to keep the halacha, and you have a responsibility to stop your children from desecration of Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Amar Rab Ami said, Vidleika, if a Jew has a fire in his house, Hitiru Lomar, they, in such a case where there's a fire, you want to put out a fire, you can't tell the Gentile, please put out the fire for me. That's Amir Lanachri. But what you could do is you could say, Kol Machabe no Mafsit. Anyone who will put out the fire won't lose. If somebody puts out the fire, he won't lose. In other words, you give him a hint that you'd pay him later for putting out the fire. Says the Gemara, maybe we can bring a proof that when you want to tell the non-Jew, if you'd put out the fire, you wouldn't lose, that that's allowed. Based on the following. The Mishnah says, so if the Gentile comes to put out the fire, we don't tell him, put it out. Also, if he is putting it out, you don't tell him, out to the kabe, don't put it out. If you're not responsible for his keeping of Shabbos. You don't tell him, put it out. But you would be able, apparently, to say, anybody who puts it out doesn't lose. It says, you don't tell him, put it out. But to say, anyone who puts it out doesn't lose, it sounds like that's okay. So Gemara says, no, you can't prove anything from our Mishnah. Hey, must say, if we read the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if he's putting it out, we don't tell him, stop putting it out. But that apparently implies like, we don't tell him, don't put it out. But it also sounds like we also call him a chabe and a mafsid. We also wouldn't say to him, if you put it out, you're not going to lose. We don't tell him anything. He's on his own. We're not responsible for him. So the Mishnah doesn't prove us anything. This Mishnah doesn't prove us one way or the other whether you're allowed to tell somebody, that is to tell a Gentile, if you would put it out, you wouldn't lose. Again, we have to remember, what's the source from Amir Lanachri? There are different ideas in the Rishonim, but one of the ideas is that the source where we can't tell Gentiles to do malacha for us is because of the pasuk that we learned about 2 days ago, about honoring Shabbos and the Navi Yeshayahu. The Navi said, V'daber davar, you have to watch what you say. So if you tell a non-Jew to do malacha, that's already a violation of V'daber davar, of not speaking the right things on Shabbos. So if you're not telling him to do it, you're just saying, if somebody would put it out, he wouldn't lose. Maybe that is therefore permitted. There was a story of an aflat leka b'chatzeiro shel Yosef and Simai b'sichin. There was a fire in the courtyard of Yosef and Simai on Shabbos and Sichin. Ubo anche gistra, and the governor, the fire department of Tzipori, the Roman fire department of Tzipori came to Chabos to put out the fire. Mipnei shaputrapa shel melech. Because he was, somebody that the king, used his financial savvy. He was the treasurer of the king. And Yosef said, I know, you're here to put out the fire. You can't do it. You play covered Shabbos, to honor Shabbos. So then Nasalones, a miracle happened for him. And rain came. And the rain put out the fire. Le'erev on Matzah Shabbos. Shigala kol echad me'em. Yosef ben Simai, he was the treasurer of the king. He sent each of the Roman firemen, Shteslayin, two shekels, Ula Parkus, and to the fire chief, Chamishim, he sent 50 dinar to pay them for having come to want to put out the fire. When the sages heard about this whole story, Amuloy Yitzara, he didn't have to stop them to put out the fire. Sharei Shanina, because we learned in our Mishnah, Nachi Shabala Chabos, if the Gentiles coming to put out the fire, you don't tell him, put it out, not put it out. That's already his own choice. You don't have to tell him to stop. Yeah, question, Baruch.
Is signaling equals to talking?
Oh, nice. There are different opinions about that. You can be lenient there. You can be lenient.
You know, you want to say a cup of coffee, put empty cup over there, and then
right. There's room to be lenient. There's room to be lenient.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's certainly good. That's certainly good. Right. Yeah, listen, a caterer, let's say, has a big bar mitzvah or a big wedding, is under big afruf, he's under a lot of stress, and they realize they forgot to plug in the hot water urn. So he's very worried. Now the customer may not want to pay him after Shabbos because he doesn't have coffee for everybody. So he tells the non-Jewish head waiter, you need to have some coffee now. Then the waiter makes coffee for herself, and that's okay. Then everybody else can benefit from it also.
Rabbi, going back to reading papers, let's say, you know, newspapers, instead of telling him to the light on, just going to show him a newspaper and say, I can't read.
Some would be lenient, yes. Some would be lenient with that. Yeah, there is room for leniency, yes. Okay, avokat and shabal l'chabos, but if a child comes to put out the fire, ain't shomala, we don't let him do it. If Nashish Visasa Alecha Aleim, because you, the parents, the Jews, are responsible to make sure all the other Jews, especially the children, keep Shabbos. Shema Minah, do we hear from here? Chatan Ochel Nevelos, if you have a child eating treif, Bezin Mitzuvan Olav Lafrisho, the Bezin has to stop him from eating the treif. Rabbi Yochanan said, no. Maybe here it's not a proof that you always have to stop children from doing Averos. Maybe here was a Chatan Ochel Adas of it. The child is doing it because he knows his father would like it. Since the child knows his father would like it, that's why he's putting out the fire. So when it's clear that the child is doing it for the will of the father, so that's already doing it. That's the father doing it. So that's when the father has to stop him. So does that mean that in the case of the Gentile, he's doing it and he knows that the Jew wants it? Mishari, would that be allowed? So the Gemara said, no, Nachri Ladati the Nafshi of it. The Gentile, he was putting out the fire because he wanted to put out the fire. He knows the Jews' benefits, but he's doing it for his own purposes. So therefore, the Gentile, you can let him do it. But the Jew, with the case of the Jewish child, that's talking about where the child knows that the father wants it, and so since he's doing it for the father, that's why everybody agrees you have to stop, even if normally when you see children doing averos, you don't have to stop them. But when the child is doing it for the father, because he knows the father wants it, then certainly the father needs to stop him.
Exactly.
Even though he's under 13, as a parent, we need to train our children how to keep Torah and mitzvos. If we see them doing averos, we need to stop them. All right, so now we're going to move on from the issues of talking to a non-Jew, very, very big topic in halacha, on Shabbos, they're telling him to do malacha. Now we move on to another issue, and that is the issues of muktzah. Kofin ka'aral gabei aner b'shvil shelo tochaz bakora. Let's say you have a lamp, a candle burning, Shabbos candles, and you're worried that the flames are jumping too high, so you're allowed to put a bowl of earthenware on top to make sure that the flames won't hit the roof and light the house on fire. Similarly, Al-tsoa shel katan, you can put a bowl over the excrement of a child, or al-akrav shelo tishach, or on a scorpion that the scorpion not bite. Amr Yehuda said, "Ma'isa b'lofnei Rabbi Yochanan Zakai ba'arav." There was a story once with Rabbi Yochanan Zakai when he was in Arabia, that a person put a bowl on top of a scorpion to prevent it from biting. For Amr Rabbi Yochanan Zakai said, but this scorpion wasn't pursuing anyone. So therefore, choshishani lo michatos. I think maybe he did a biblical sin here. We know that one of the biblical sins on Shabbos is tzad, to trap things. And here he's trapping the scorpion. So maybe it is a biblical sin. Very good. We're going to see that in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to address that very issue. Exactly. Okay, so going now further in the Gemara, we're talking about putting a bowl on top of excrement. So that's really the issues of muktzah. Muktzah means not only that I can't move an item that's muktzah, I can't move for the sake of an item that's muktzah. I can't move something which itself is not muktzah to try to serve an item which is muktzah. So when you think about excrement, That's mukta. So this is an interesting issue. You can put a bowl on top of the excrement. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba and Rabbi Chanan bar Rava iklu lebei avin demin neshikya. They came to the house of Avin from neshikya. The Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba aisu lupi raita. For Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, he brought them beds. You know, they used to sit, recline on couches. He brought them couches. Rabbi Chanan bar Rava lo aisu le. Rabbi Chanan bar Rava, he didn't bring them a couch to recline on. He seated him on the floor. So Rav Chan, this is what, again, Avin did to the rabbis. Avin distinguished between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba on one side. He treated them with a lot of respect. And on Chanan bar Rava, he didn't treat him with respect. He put him on the floor. So Rav Chanan bar Rava was upset. He's being mistreated here. He's not being welcomed equally as a guest. So he saw that his host Avin was teaching his son. What was he teaching his son? Our Mishnah. Valtzoa shel katan mipnei katan. And he was teaching his son the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you can put a bowl overneath on top of excrement. So he read it. You could put the bowl on top of the excrement of a child in order to save the child from getting dirty, from playing with the excrement. Amarle. So Rav Chanan, who was annoyed, he said, Avin shatya masni shtuse libnei. Avin, the fool, teaches foolishness to his son. Hello, he atzma muchenes leklavim. The excrement is not mukta. The excrement is food for a dog. So if it's food for a dog, you could carry it. So therefore, you could cover it for any reason. It's not just you can cover it so that your child doesn't get dirty. You can always cover it. You're moving something for the sake of something, which is itself not mukta. V'chitem, and if you're going to tell me, listen, it wasn't prepared from yesterday. The excrement was born now. It's nolad, so it is mukta. V'atan b'yulant in a braisa. In regards to the prohibition of tchumin, we know that you're not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amos out of your settlement. But the Braisa says, an item that started 2,000 amos out of this settlement, if it comes to us on Shabbos, I can't use it. But naharos amoshkin, rivers that are pulling water from a far place, umayanos hanovim, and springs that have a lot of spring water coming from a far place, harein kiragle kol adam. They have the status of the legs of people. Wherever people could walk to, they could also take water from those places. So you see, even though it wasn't prepared from before Shabbos, it's not considered mukta. So the same thing is here too. The excrement, even though it wasn't made before Shabbos, if it's usable, it shouldn't be mukta. So what's the issue? Why do you say you could only move the bowl to cover the excrement to save a kid? It's not about saving a kid. The excrement itself is not mukta. You can move a bowl to cover it for whatever reason. You don't like the smell, you can use it. So Avin said, okay, Rav Chanan, you got me. How should I explain this Mishnah to my son? So Rav Chanan explained, Ema, this is the way to explain the Mishnah. Altsoa shel tarnagolim mipnei katan. You can bring a bowl to cover the excrement of chickens. The excrement of chickens is not edible. Dogs wouldn't eat it. So since it's not edible, it is mukta. So that you can bring a bowl only to cover it so that the child not get dirty. Says the Gemara, who cares whether dogs eat an excrement or not? The tape of clay dava graf shil rei. Why don't you just treat excrement like a toilet bowl? Remember, in those days they didn't have modern plumbing. Had a big earthenware urn, one for the urine that was called Avit Shomei Raglayim, and another one for the excrement that was called the Graf Shel Rei. So when the rabbis made the laws of Mukta, they're making the laws, they said things that don't have a human purpose, you can't carry around on Shabbos, but they said you could always take these toilet bowls and take them out of the house, because they said it's going to smell up the house. Not going to be able to learn. Not going to be able to enjoy Shabbos. So let excrement be considered like a toilet bowl. Therefore, it shouldn't be mukta. The chitam, if you're going to tell me, grav shel rei agav mana'in. a toilet bowl you can move because it's in a big urn. The urn is why you're allowed to move it. But you goofy. But the excrement itself, lo, is mukta. Vahu achbar. But we know that there was a story with a mouse. Dishtakach bispar makite de Rav Ashi. That was found amongst all the spices of Rav Ashi. Vahamaluhu, and Rav Ashi told him, Nekutu b'tzutzisi v'afuku. Grab it in its tail and take it out. So why could you take out the mouse by its tail? It's not something with a human purpose. Apparently it's disgusting. It's like excrement. So since it's excrement, you can clear it. You can take it away. So the Gemara answers, when do we say that excrement is not mukta? That's when you need to get it away. But when the excrement is already in the garbage dump, then it is mukta because you don't have a need to get it away anymore. Here we're talking about excrement in the ashpa, in the garbage dump. So the Gemara says, well, if you're talking about excrement in the garbage dump, the katan ba'ashpa my boile. Why do you have to bring a bowl to cover the excrement from the child in the garbage dump? What's the child doing in the garbage dump? Answer the Gemara, we're talking about a garbage dump that's in your courtyard, b'chatzer. Gemara says, still, chatzer nami. But if it's in the courtyard, then graf shereyu, then you're allowed to move it because it's just a toilet bowl. So Gemara says again, no, ba'ashpa she b'chatzer. We're talking about in the garbage dump within the courtyard. So since it's already in the garbage dump in the courtyard, here the rabbis didn't make their leniency that you can move around toilet bowls because it's already out. It's in the garbage dump. But if you see a kid playing there, so now a kid is playing with mukta, he's going to get himself dirty. You're allowed to bring a bowl and cover the mukta to prevent the kid from getting dirty. Yeah, question. The bowl is not mukta. It's a plate. No, because the graf shel rei is also not mukta. The graf, the excrement, is not mukta. But if you're going to take the bowl to cover it, then it's mivato kli meichano. Now you're using the kli for mukta. So that's our whole issue. Is the shofchin, or the things that come out of a person, either it's graf shel rei or not? If it's graf shel rei, it's not mukta. But once it's already out of the house, it's already in the garbage dump, so now it becomes mukta. Even mukta you'd be allowed to do in order to save a kid from getting dirty. So now we're going to get to Gabriel's point, which is the Mishnah discussed a person putting a bowl on top of a scorpion. So the Mishnah said you're allowed to put a bowl on top of a scorpion, al akrav shelo tishach, to prevent the scorpion from biting. But we then said, Rabbi Yehuda said that a story had come in front of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai when he was in Arabia, and he said, no, I think that might be trapping. So, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kol hamazikin ne'aragin b'shabbos. All the damaging things, you know, like a tiger, a lion, a snake, you can kill them on Shabbos. Everything, you can kill it on Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh, you can save a life. Muslim, Rabbi Yosef challenges from a brisa. The brisa says, Chamisha ne'eragin b'Shabbos. There are five mazikim that you can kill on Shabbos. The Eluain, these are the five damagers you could kill on Shabbos. Zvuv sheberetz Mitzrayim, the fly of Egypt. Sira shebeninve, the hornet of Iraq. Akrav shebehadyav, maybe this is Aleppo, Chadyav? I don't know. The scorpion of Chadyav. Nacha Sheberet Yisrael, the snake of the land of Israel. The Kelev Shota B'chol Makom, an Arabian dog in any place. So only five. So money. So who is this? Ilim Rabbi Yehuda, if it's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Ha'amar, he says, Malacha Shenetzricha Legufa. Chayav Aleha. He says, a Malacha, not needed for the purpose of the Mishkan. You're still Chayav. So therefore, how would he even allow these five mazik? And this is Gabriel's point. In the Mishkan, the trapping was to trap, let's say, a ram in order to skin the ram. You're trapping it to use it. But when you're trapping the fly from Egypt, you don't want to use the fly. You just want it to die. You want to get rid of it. It's not the way it was done in the Mishkan. Now, according to you, there are even things that aren't being done the way they were done in the Mishkan. You're also chayiv. So then how are you allowed to do this? El alav Rabbi Shimon. So it must be Rabbi Shimon. But if it's Rabbi Shimon, hanu deshari, why are you only allowed to do these five? Achrini lo, why can't you do the others too? So it sounds like you can't do the others. So how could we say that you're allowed to kill all the mazikin? I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, "My name is Amar Taretzti. Who says this brisa that says you can only kill five mazikin on Shabbos is a correct brisa? Maybe it's all wrong and we shouldn't rely on it." Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef answered, "Ana masnisala. I taught this brisa. Vosivnala. And I challenge Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, who said you could kill all the mazikin on Shabbos with this brisa. And I explained the brisa. When Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi says you could kill any damaging animal on Shabbos, it's biratzu achrav. It's when that damaging animal is running after a person. So if a snake is running after a person, a lion is running after a person, it's bikuach nefesh. And Divrei HaKol, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, you're allowed to kill it to save the life. But when the Braisa says that you can only kill five mazikin, that's referring to these mazikin that are not chasing a person. So if they're not chasing a person, it's not pikuach nefesh anymore. It's not a danger to the life. So now you get into the issue, can you kill it or not? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you wouldn't be able to kill it, because even though it's for a purpose different than the purpose of the Mishkan, you're still chayiv in those cases. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, when you're doing a malacha for a purpose different than the purpose of the Mishkan, it's only a rabbinic prohibition. Okay, since it's only a rabbinic prohibition, since these five creatures are very dangerous, here the rabbis didn't make their prohibition, and they allowed him to kill them even when they're not threatening the person. But other things that are not threatening a person, they wouldn't allow him to kill them.
Yeah, question.
It is. They're both malachos. Exactly. Yeah, equally. Exactly. No. Depends how allergic you are to it.
Like
a malaria-ridden mosquito you could kill on Shabbos.
I don't know if malaria or malaria.
If you're on safari in Africa, you can kill the mosquitoes. What's that? West Nile, yeah, you could also kill. Yeah, those are mazikin.
What about taking two cups and
seeing it outside? Oh, yeah, if you leave it a little bit open, it's not fully trapped. That would be okay. Because the Torah says don't do malacha. The definition of malacha is what was done in the Mishkan. So if you're doing the same act, trapping or slaughtering, but for a reason different than the reason of the Mishkan, that's called malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, a malacha not needed for what it was needed for in the Mishkan. Here Rabbi Yehuda says it's still a biblical sin, and Rabbi Shimon says it's only a rabbinic sin. Okay, rabbinic sin would be suspended for a masik. Tani Tana Kamedi Rabba Baravuna. There was a Tana who taught in front of Rabba Baravuna. Rabba Baravuna. Ha'horig nechashim v'akravim b'Shabbos. If somebody kills snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, ein ruach hasidim nochem enu. The big tzaddikim are not so happy with him. Amar le, so Rabba said to this, your master of brisos, v'osan chasidim, ein ruach hachamim nochem mehem. Those chasidim, the sages are not happy with them, because this person did the right thing. Even if the snakes and the scorpions are not a threat right now, they might become a threat. So since they might become a threat, the smart people go and eliminate them on Shabbos, and they know that it's the right thing to do so. Upliga de Rav Huna. This is against Rav Huna. Rav Huna, chazilahu gavad de kakatel zibura. Rav Huna saw a person killing a hornet on Shabbos. Amar le, he said to him, shlamtinu lekulu. In other words, what did you gain? Have you killed all the hornets in the world? So apparently he holds, you're not going to kill a single hornet. That's against the view of Rava, who held you are allowed to kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos, because in the future they might be damagers and endanger people.
Why is this so good to begin with? A pikuach nefesh dog on Shabbos, and
that, right.
And that's the principle.
But it's not a pikuach nefesh now. It's not chasing you. Well, I mean, you can just go inside and lock the door. I mean, there are other ways that you can avoid danger. So So the question is, how aggressive should we be in terms of eliminating dangers on Shabbos?
It sounds like if it wasn't Shabbos, you'd be obligated to
kill it. 100%.
Yeah.
If it wasn't Shabbos, you should be killing it, for sure. So Rabbanu lived in a b'raisa. Let's say a person has snakes and scorpions around him. Hargan, if he killed them, then he should know Hashem did him a big favor. He had the schus of eliminating dangers. Hashem wanted him to kill them. Lo hargan, if he didn't kill them, so then so that's a sign from heaven that he really has a sin. Therefore, he should have been killing them. And a miracle happened that he didn't kill them. Amar Ula Ula said, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, that's true, b'ni shofenbo. That's if they're hissing, they're all angry, then it's a mitzvah to kill them. But if they're not all angry, it's not such a mitzvah to kill them. And it's not a sign that necessarily you should have killed them. Amar Rabbi Bar Kahana, Rabbi Bar Kahana said, Pamachas nafal echad bebeis ha-medrash. One time there was a snake that fell into the beis medrash on Shabbos. Amad niyuti echad. There was a certain Jew from the place of Nayos who got up. Bahargo, he killed the snake on Shabbos. Amar Rebbe, Rebbe said, Pagabo kayotzebo. This snake got hit by a man like him. So he bailahu. So what did Rebbe mean? Hagabo kiyotzebo, the shapir of it. Is he saying he did the right thing?
Yeah.
You know, the snake was violent, and against the violent snake, you should be violent. Or maybe, lo, he's saying the opposite. The snake is wicked, and the man who killed it was also doing an act of wickedness. Toshma, come here, proof. To Reb Abba, Bred, Reb Chia Bar Abba, Reb Abba, the son of Reb Chia Bar Abba, and Reb Zera, Havuyasi Akila. They were sitting at the doorway, the Bei Reb Yanai, of the home of Reb Yanai, Nafik Milsim Yibenai, something came out from between them. Bo mi name Reb Yanai, they asked Reb Yanai, Ma'u la rog nechashim v'akravim b'Shabbos? Are you allowed to kill snakes and scorpions on Shabbos? Amlu, he said to them, listen, Sira ani hore, I kill hornets on Shabbos. Nechash v'akrav lo kol shekein, certainly I would kill a snake and a scorpion. And so that's the proof that this student who killed the snake in the base medrash did the right thing. Somewhere I said, maybe not. The Dilma, maybe the Fitumo. Maybe all that means is if you're walking and you see a snake around, you can keep walking even though you're going to step on a snake. But not that you can go deliberately to kill a snake. Some of you, do we know, Rav Yehuda used to say, Roke, dorsal Fitumo. If you see spit on the ground, you keep walking normally. Either when you step on the spit, you're going to smooth out the holes in the ground. You're not trying to do so. It's okay. Amar Rav Sheshet said, Nachash torso lefitumo. A snake, you can trample it as you're just walking without trying to. Amar Rav Ketina, akrav torso lefitumo. But maybe you don't see that you're allowed to go deliberately to kill a snake that falls into a base medrash. Abba Bar Marta, to Abba Bar Minyumi. Abba Bar Marta is also called Abba Bar Minyumi. Havumaski Bay, the Bay Reish Kalusa Zuzi. The people from the house of the Reish Kalusa were coming to ask money from him because he had borrowed money from them. Aisuyu, they brought him to the house of the Reish Kalusa, the Kamitsarule, and they were basically afflicting him so that he should pay back the money owed to the Reish Kalusa. Havashadi Ruka, there was spit in front of them. Amalu Reish Kalusa, the Reish Kalusa said, Asi money, bring a utensil, and schifu levei, and cover the spit. Amalu, he said, lo tzrichu, so you don't need to do that. Tazachi am Rabbi Yehuda, rok dorsal lefitumo. Rabbi Yehuda said, if there's spit on the ground, you can keep walking normally, and if you step this, if you push the spit into the ground, that's okay, because you're walking normally. Amalu, the Reish Kalusa said, oh, apparently tzurban merabananu, he's a Torah scholar. So shavku, let him be, don't give him such a hard time.
But Rabbi, he was going to collect payment on Shabbos?
I guess they wanted him to pay after Shabbos.
But they were harassing him on
Shabbos. Was he that religious
on Shabbos?
Yeah. No, the Reish Kalusa wasn't necessarily that religious. He was just the political leader of the Jews. Good point. But he had respect for the Torah scholars. That he had respect for. Exactly. All right, so now we talk about Muktzah again. Amar Rabba Bar Kahana, Amar Rab Chanina. Pamotos. When you have a candlestick, Shobeis Rebbe, the ones of the house of Rebbe, Mutul Tzatlam B'Shabbos. You're allowed to move them around on Shabbos. Amalei Reb Zeira said, what type of candlesticks are we referring to? B'nitalim B'yado Achas? Are we talking about the candlesticks you can carry in one hand? Or B'shtei Yadayim, or the big ones that you need two hands to carry? Amalei said to him, Ka'osan Shobeis Avicha, like the ones of your father's house, the ones you need, you can carry with one hand. Amalei Rabba Barakan Reb Chanina. Rabbi Rakana said another lesson in the name of Reb Chanina. Kronos, the big wagons, Shobeis Rebbe of Rebbe's house, Mutl Tzatlam the Shabbos, you're allowed to move them around on Shabbos. Amalei Reb Zeira. Reb Zeira again asked the question. Did he tell him about them Echad or B'shnei B'nei Adam? Wagons that only one person is needed to move them, or two? Amalei said, Kosan Shobeis Avicha, those like your father's house that are only carried by one person. Rabbi Rakana said another lesson. Itulam Reb Chanina lebeis Rebbe. Reb Chanina permitted the people of Rebbe's house lishtos yayin bekronos shel nachri to bring wine that had been transported in the wagons of Gentiles, so long as it was chosam echad, it was Jewish wine with one seal. So v'lo yadan, I wasn't sure. Imishim nesav lekrib elezer. Isn't it nihoz lekrib elezer that if you have one seal on the wine container, that's enough to say that it's kosher and that the non-Jew didn't tamper with it? Or maybe since the non-Jew was bringing things for Rebbe, Rebbe was a government official, so they're afraid to upset the government official. So that's why he knows that he's not going to tamper with it. But maybe generally you would hold you need two seals to know that the wine is Jewish wine and the non-Jew didn't get a chance to tamper with it. Ad kan daf kuf chaf aleph.